It's another Friday afternoon, and you are tuned to another episode of The Sud Show. At Sud Show on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSudShow, and sudshow.com. In my company today is...
Walcott & Smith Garden Design, based in Hertfordshire.
What's your name?
My name's Adam Walcott.
And I'm John, Jonathan Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Sud Show Garden Podcast.
Last met when you built your garden at Chelsea Flower Show. What was the garden? What was it about? And where did the idea come from?
The last garden, I mean, obviously you're not referring to this one, but are you? I mean, or you mean kind of the one before this one?
No, this one at Chelsea.
This one. We were approached by the World Horse Welfare Charity to create a garden to celebrate 90 years of their charity and all the sort of good works that they've done. And really, the sort of designs we do are very naturalistic. We like to use lots of wildflowers. We like to create very evocative, very emotional gardens. And the sort of feeling they wanted to get across actually married up really, really well, the sort of gardens we like to do. So it was almost like a sort of a marriage made in heaven, really. And we met up at their offices in Norfolk. We all got on really, really well. They said, would we like to do the garden? And we said, yes. It was kind of as simple as that, really.
But I speak to Ian Price, and he's telling me that Ivy Verdi rang him and said, would you like some help? And he thought they meant, you know, help planting the garden. And in fact, they meant sponsorship of the garden. It was the only thing missing. I speak to Menage, and he's telling me that he'd gone out and he'd sent all these information packs out to all of these people and got four replies back all saying no. And then he's having a conversation with this person who's a client of his, and he essentially stumbles across it. With Charlotte Harris, it was almost design competition again. And those three are all, go back and listen to them if you want to. In your case, you're probably the first to ever turn around and say to me that, you'll never guess what, we came down one morning, Santa was sitting there in the armchair and said, gentlemen, wait and I tell you, I've got a big bag of cash and I'd love you to build me a garden at Chelsea. Is that, as much as I might make that sound a little bit, you know, silly billy, it's not far off the mark of what happened that I'm grasping.
Well, that's exactly what happened. Yeah, absolutely. The charity, World Horse Welfare, they approached us. They'd had a donation from one of the supporters and to build a garden at Chelsea. And we're known for our traditional nostalgic schemes. And they wanted us to do it because we do very sort of emotional gardens, lots of wildlife, lots of...
natural looking gardens, really. And we were a little bit lucky as well, because sometimes you know, it's sort of the right person, the right time, and it just so happened we'd done a garden for another charity previously, and the lady who worked for that charity now works for World Horse Welfare. So she'd seen our work previously, liked what we'd done then, and then sort of suggested, you know, we could be a good, you know, a good fit for this garden. So we were lucky in that aspect, but at the end of the day, they, you know, they approached us and said, we've got X amount to build the garden, would you be interested? And, you know, come on, this is the Chelsea Flower Show. This is the most prestigious, the most famous flower show on earth. Spaces are limited. Who would say no? You'd be mental to say no. So yeah, we said yes, and yeah, it's just brilliant.
Well, you say fortunate and luck, but luck, as my dad would always say, is hard work and being in the right place. There is essentially no such thing. But the one thing that I would always, and I repeatedly say this to, I guess, every garden designer, whether it's being Tadden or Hampton or Chatsworth or Chelsea, the common denominator in all of it is if you don't have that sponsor, you don't get to build that garden, full stop. Without question, you can be the best designer on the planet. If sponsor pulls the plug, you're toast, number one. And number two, the relationship with the sponsor, it's as important once they're on board as the contractor that you have to build your garden. And it essentially decides both of those two things, outside of your design being all right, decides whether you get medal or you don't even get to be at the show. Is that a fair way to put that? And how did the build of that garden as an overall go for you?
Well, I think it went quite well. The the sponsor actually gave us a brief of the sort of thing they wanted, so we knew roughly what we were going to do. And the actual build went okay. We had a couple of wet days, which was made it a little bit mucky, but the plants loved it. But other than that, it all went reasonably well, didn't it?
Yeah, and we've got a contractor that we've worked with. We've done six gardens at the Chelsea Flower Show. We've used the same hard landscaper every single time, who's, you know, a real close, you know, him and his family, a real close friend. So we've got to that point now where we almost have this, you know, this mental telepathic link where we just know what each other wants. And we just say to our hard landscaper, our friend Cormac from Conway Landscapes, we say to him, Cormac, we show him the picture and he just gets it straight away. If we want a really old, decrepit wall, we don't have to explain how to do it. He just knows exactly. He can read our mind, and we've got to know him so well, and he'll just create that for us just there and then, really, really easily. But you know, when you said about the relationship with the sponsor, it is really, really important, because I mean, I've had situations in the, well, not personally, but I've seen situations in the past where sometimes sponsors have got a little bit too hands-on with the designer. Perhaps interfered is a bit of a strong word, but I've seen designers just run off in a complete strop because they've fallen out with the, you know, with the views of the sponsor. So there can be tensions, but World Horse Welfare were fantastic, because basically once they'd given us the sponsorship money, they just let us go, and they just said, guys, do your thing, we're not going to interfere, and that was great. They just let us have that complete artistic freedom to build what we wanted to build.
Just to clarify that, and let me back up for those of you at home listening to that, it is to an extent pedantic way to be, maybe as a designer, number one, but it's also an admirable trait. It's not like you're trying to, we've got Bono and how do we keep him sweet, you know, you have to, if he doesn't get the yellow M&Ms in his bowl. It's not at that level. The point is when you design a garden with your name at the top of the page and the sponsor turns around and says, let's say hypothetically, I want my name and pink neon lights at the back of it all, and yours is kind of 17th century styled planting, let's just be simplify it for the minute. If you put those pink neon lights up, you're doing as per what your sponsor wants, but ultimately you're doomed the minute you do it as a designer for the rest of your life. Now, at home, you may also turn around and say, well, they should have taken the pink neon lights into consideration, but sometimes that falls into the brief a little bit further down the line when that design has already been accepted for Chelsea, and now you're in a conundrum where it is nothing but an absolute nightmare. So it's valid from the sponsor's point of view because they're footing the bill essentially, but it's also valid from the designer's point of view, and the people in the middle are essentially Chelsea Flower Show, and they're kind of going, what have we got coming in? It's a marriage made in the opposite of heaven, essentially.
I mean, yeah, it's so brilliant how you picked up on that, because that is so often the case. And I mean, there were some things that World Horse Welfare came up with, some suggestions after the initial plan had gone in. And you have to be quite firm as well as being tactful at the same time, because, you know, having done six shows, you kind of get the feel of what the judges are looking out for. You get the feel of what can completely trash a garden, what can completely crash a garden with regards to a good medal or a poor medal. And you do have to kind of say, look, you know, we realise you're paying for this. We realise this is your baby. You're funding it. But at the end of the day, if you want that good medal, then you've got to trust us when we say, no, that can't appear in the garden, because sometimes sponsors can get a little bit carried away. And a garden like ours that is very natural, full of wild flowers, very, you know, wild plants, that nice natural feeling, you've got to keep that kind of thing. And if you try and bring something into that that's very contemporary, that stands out, that's very modern, then the judges are going to straight away say, well, for goodness sake, you know, the garden generally is looking really oldie-woldy and very evocative, but why is that elephant in the room in the corner over there? It just blows the whole thing apart. So there is that difficulty there where you've got to keep the sponsor happy. You've got to realise they own the garden at the end of the day. It's not yours, even though you're really strong about it and passionate about it and you feel like it's your baby. So it's that really difficult position. And of course, the RHS at the end of the day, they want the garden finished, and they want a garden that is going to look spectacular, and also, you know, to get a good medal, because that's great when the public come around and have a look.
Well, let me go to something that I put to Andrew Wilson and Gavin McWilliam when I was talking to them, and what I said was, as invariably you listening at home will know, I always end up here. It's not the Led Zepp Hendrix reference, if you tried to design a garden where debris was falling in love, you put it into the calculator, you press the square root button, and you try and equationalize something. You see a woman on the far side of the bar, and she is, to quote Dylan Moran, if I don't marry her, if I don't run away with her, I'm going to end up with itchy trousers. Life won't be worth living. It just isn't. And you don't know why you feel that, but you do. In your garden, as with Andrew's and Gavin's, there is that attraction to the garden that you have made, number one, which is either there or it isn't. But when you start to then break it down to the planting, to the stonework, to the backdrop, to the, as you and I would know as people who build gardens, you can strip it down and put it back together again as you're walking up, whether it's Main Avenue or Artisan or Fresh, it doesn't really matter. You know how it's built. But when you fall in love, those things that are incorrect, you don't notice them. And that, in a garden with your eyes closed, is quite a difficult thing to achieve. You two have somehow or other mastered that pretty damn good. And that's not something that is potluck either. So if sponsors had an influence, I'm hesitant to find where it is. I would more suggest that you closed your eyes, you listen to the Hendrix playing, and you write poetry because you were inspired by that song, and somebody turns around and says, whoever this guy is, I've also got to run away with him. Does that tie in with you? Do you identify with those things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to fall in love with the garden. I mean, this is, you know, so much pressure to create something like this. And it's like the Olympics. You know, if you want to win a gold at the Olympics, you can't just like running. You can't just like rowing. You know, it's got to be your entire being. It's got to be your entire soul and your entire passion. And you can't make up that you like running or rowing. And it's the same with creating a garden at the Chelsea Flower Show. You've got to completely, you can't fake it. You can't fake it to yourself, and you can't fake it to the judges or the public, because it will show. So it's got to be something that you feel inside, something that makes you emotional, and something that just comes from within inside you without too much effort, without too much thought. If you've got to really think it, if you've got to really kind of plan it and manipulate it in your mind, it's not going to work. It's just literally, you know, sometimes writers or songwriters or poets, they just have this moment where suddenly something explodes in their head and they've just got to get it down on paper there and then at that moment, or you'll lose it. That's what creating a garden at Chelsea is like. But you've got that energy pent up for months, and then suddenly you arrive at your plot, and then that's it. It just explodes out of you into the garden, and you, it's almost like an exorcism of passion and design coming out of you, but then being sort of transferred and manifesting itself in your garden.
Whilst he's saying all that, and I agree with you entirely, and if I could, you know, go on an ad break here and finish out with a song, this would be a perfect moment to do it, but I can't because we don't have a sponsor for the show, so we're just going to have to continue on with what's in Peter's head. Did he absolutely do your head in whilst you were building this garden with that passion that I admire? And it is a very admirable trait. However, there is a build of a garden which is an absolute pressure cooker to be continued whilst he's exercising his passion. And that's not exercising as in E-X-E-R-C-I-S, it's E-X-O-R.
Well, we've both got the same passion. I've got the same passion as Adam, and we've worked together for a long, long time, and we do have the same passion, and we saw this garden in our heads completely. And I planted one side, Adam planted the other side, nobody else planted a plant at all, just us. We had a vision completely. There were a few moments, because we worked slightly differently, there were a few tense moments, especially towards the end of the show, when there was too much talking to other people and not enough planting. And I got it in the neck a few times, and I gave it right back to him as well in the neck. And we had a few tense moments where we did swear at each other and just walk off. Some of that is down to tiredness, some of that is down to not eating properly, and then the pressure is on, because other gardens around you, they're starting to get finished and you're thinking, oh, we're slow down a bit, we need to get going. And then you start to get more pressure, and then you get more stressy, and you get more snappy, and then you start to rush something, and then that doesn't work, so you stand back and it looks rubbish, and then you have to take your time and go back to it. But at the end of the day, we have both got that passion and we're enthusiastic about plants and gardening. And we love it. We also do garden maintenance as well as garden design, and that gives us the passion and enthusiasm. And I was brought up on a farm, so I've seen wildflowers in their situations, and I know how they would grow and the combinations that they have. But if you haven't got passion and enthusiasm, then just don't do a garden at Chelsea. Don't do a show. You've got to have it. Otherwise, it's pointless. Otherwise, the gardens we create have we like to think that they have a bit of a soul and they have a bit of our emotion into it. So when you go to the garden, you're drawn in and you feel a little bit. You know, it's about the emotion that you feel. And you know, if a garden hasn't got that, then it's not. You know, it's not a garden. You've got to experience a garden as well as just see it. And some gardens are, you know, are wonderful, but they're not quite, you know, there's no kind of attraction particularly.
Is that attraction that for a very elongated period of time assumed only existed in my head, which is, as I refer to it, it's the woman on the far side of the bar, the restaurant, the pier, or whatever the case may be. And to use the Dylan Moran line, if I don't spend the rest of my life with her, I'm going to have itchy trousers. Life isn't worth living. I'm sure there's a more eloquent way to describe it, but if you fall in love instantaneously, it is just that, and it is that simple. Is that thing that you're referring to? So I'm now not on my... I don't have an inferiority complex as such anymore.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it is like that. It's... Because the whole, you know, with the whole thing, it's like we said, you feel the whole thing, you've lived the whole thing for months and months on end, and it's just like letting all your energy, all your passion, just literally flow out into that garden, and just all those thoughts. And it's weird, John and I are kind of almost, when we create gardens together, almost sort of joined, like we've got a joint brain, because we just have the same vision for it, the same feel for it, and it's just really, really lucky that, you know, we both think along exactly those sort of same lines. And when we finish the garden, we stand back and you do feel love for the garden. And every day, you know, the plants grow, they start to really look happy together, and we say, you know, breakdown is horrible, because I mean, imagine, you know, imagine if after sort of painting the Mona Lisa a week later, you know, it was just ripped up and then thrown away. That, you know, that would be insane. But that's technically what we're doing here. We're spending 6 months, perhaps a year, concentrating on this garden, friends and family helping, customers helping, so many different people getting involved. All your energy just floods into creating this one garden, this ephemeral space for 5 or 6 days. And at the end, you look at it and you think, you know what? If you gave me £10 million now, I couldn't recreate that same garden next week or the week after. It's gone. I've got it out of me. It's there. And then you've got to take it all down and destroy it. You've got to remove it. And all, okay, yeah, lots of gardens get recycled, but it will never ever appear again as that moment when you created it at Chelsea. It just can't. Which is, in one way, a brilliant thing because it is ephemeral. But in another way, it's sad because, you know, your creation only exists on social media, you know, out in the kind of in space, in on paper, and that kind of thing. It never physically exists again for you to go and see it. So you almost feel a bit bereaved afterwards. You almost feel like you've lost a partner, you've lost a loved one, because this thing you've nurtured, that you've cared for, that you've worked on, that you've thought about, that you've argued about, that you've cried about, just like you would in a relationship, has suddenly been taken away from you.
I'll back that up, because I never wanted to see the takedown of any show garden I've ever built, be they for competition or just display. I've never been there for the takedown. I've allowed the lads to go in and essentially, okay, the plants come out as plants do, as they are planted, which is, again, it's not real. But the rest of it was, I basically said, you've got carte blanche, do what you want. It sounds a bit silly, but I wanted to remember it as I last remembered it. And dissecting that and putting it into reverse play of a video in my head, it's the point before you actually walked into the bar, except you walk in 3 minutes later and she's not there, and you're now in a state of, why did I say hello to your man outside on the street? It's ultimate heartbreak if you feel a little bit that way. And again, you either feel that way or you want to figure out the equation for falling in love so you can try replicate it to win medal. But ultimately, that's a flawed principle in the first place. Let's sidetrack out of this one, and it's something that I find particularly hard to find, which is doing something that has got nothing to do with the great outdoors. Do you have that thing that you do?
Probably not really. I mean, I mean, the outdoors is my life. That's the thing. I mean, people think I'm a bit nerdy because they say, what do you do in your spare time? And I mean, the first thing I'm going to do after Chelsea is walk out into my garden and just walk around my garden and just see, you know, what's come into bloom, what needs attention, what needs looking after.
What did you ignore for the last 5 weeks?
Yeah, exactly. You know, what have I missed? And and it's weird. It's just that's what we love doing. And because of the work we do, because we run a garden design business and a garden maintenance business, we've got some fantastic clients who live out in the countryside. So we get to go out into the countryside this time of year. We get to see the elderberries flowering, the hawthorn hedges, the bluebells. You get to see nature come from looking so drab and grey in January and February to suddenly this time from May to the middle of June when everything just looks so green and so verdant, it doesn't seem possible. And then a little later in the year, you know, the colours subside, the grasses go a little bit more from green to brown. And then further beyond that, you know, autumn comes and colours change. So yeah, I don't really have a huge amount of interest outside of gardening in the outside world, probably apart from, yeah, I like to eat out, I like the odd drink, but really, you know, for me, nature, wildlife is my life and my passion.
Yeah, we have the same things in common, really. I'm the farmer's son from Kent. I was brought up in the countryside, and that's what we love to do. It's something more emotional about sort of doing sort of more rural gardens than more contemporary gardens with lots of concrete or lots of steel or whatever. For us, I think the gardens that we do are the gardens we like to go and see. We feel more at home in those sort of spaces than in more contemporary gardens. So that's why we're more at home in those spaces, because it just means more to us and we're happier.
And going back to what you were saying a moment ago, creating a garden at Chelsea Flower Show is almost like a holiday romance. But, you know, you're going somewhere different, somewhere you've never been before, and then you fall in love with this person, you fall in love with this garden, and you suddenly think you can't live without this person or you can't live without this garden. And then the show comes to an end, the holiday comes to an end, and you know in your heart of hearts you're not going to see this person again, you're not going to see this garden again, and that is tough, but you know, you get over it, and it's weird, and it's probably why we always say every time we're never going to do another Chelsea garden, and then we always do another Chelsea garden, because you know, to get over the loss of that holiday romance, you just go off and do another one all over again.
So let's go pop quiz round if we can, and we'll do this from one to the other. Your favourite tipple or drink?
Oh, gin and tonic.
Cosmopolitan.
Last piece of music you actually bought?
I don't know. I can't think. No, can't think.
I think it was a Madonna album, to be honest. I can't remember anything.
We leave that one right there. If I was to give you anything you could have in a sandwich, what would it be?
It would be ham aspargo.
Oh, tuna mayo.
What's the last meal you had at Chelsea?
Breakfast, actually. Nice breakfast.
Mine was yesterday. Chicken Sunday roast with stuffing and roast potatoes.
Jeepers. I'm only shy now of asking you your mother's maiden name and you're getting access to your pin code for your credit card. What's the future hold for the both of you, I guess collectively or as individuals? What happens number one straight after Chelsea, and what are the plans for, I guess, 2018? They should already be in flow, I would assume.
Well, I think after Chelsea, we would like to have some rest, but unfortunately we can't. We've got lots of landscaping jobs and lots of projects on, so we won't be able to have holidays until probably the end of the summer. Next year, who knows? You know, we got approached on this garden for the sponsor, and we didn't actively look for anything. We haven't got anything planned for next year. I think we're going to have a year off, but who knows? If somebody comes forth and says, we've got this amount of money, we'd like you to do this, and if it is something up our street, we might consider it. If not, we probably won't. But who knows? We'll see.
Is it a case of, and I know when I talk to bands, they're saying to me, well, we'll just do a year in the road, and they're almost, for the newer bands, the non-U2s who are 30, 40 years on the go, it's almost as if they take a year off from not touring, that void will be filled by somebody else, and so they keep on chasing the, well, let's get to the top, and you're kind of going, well, what is the top? The top is non-existent, and you're caught in this almost hamster wheel, which you don't want to get off, I should add, of show garden building. And the only thing that's going to take it off or away from you is if a sponsor actually comes up and says, lads, not this year, but I'm booking you for next year. And then you know you're back on the touring track all over again, because you call it a holiday romance, but it is a bit of a bubble that you live in for a period of time. And to come down off of that buzz, and I'll put buzz in context. So I think the first garden I built, show garden, 20 metres by 10, our coffee bill for people coming in and just saying thanks to them, if I remember correctly, it was 360 something euro at the time, which like was lunacy when you think about it. And that's only whilst the coffee stand was there, which is pretty much about the last 2 weeks in your case. Does that put it in context a bit?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, life is short, and you know, opportunities don't come along that often. And you know, there's that saying, you know, players only love you when you're playing. And that's the thing. When you don't do Chelsea, you suddenly think, oh my goodness, you're watching it at home, and I'm not there, we're not there, and it feels odd, and you panic a little bit as well, because nobody stays at the top forever. Nobody gets invited to the same thing forever. You know, as you get older. In any profession, whether you're a tennis player, whether you're a singer, whether you're a dancer, you have your time, you have your period, and you build up to it, you're on top for a bit, and then you'll slide down the other side. So while the opportunity is there, you should seize it. But also, sometimes you do need to take a little bit of a while out to get that passion and get that hunger again. There was a time when we did three gardens from 2006 all the way through to 2008. And then after the third one, we still enjoyed it, but we thought it's becoming a bit of a process rather than a hunger and a passion. And the good thing about this one is we've not been at Chelsea for a good sort of 2, 3, 4 years. So we started to get the hunger for it again. We really started to miss it, and we really started to get the passion for it because we hadn't done it for a little while. So that really, really helps as well, because you know what it's like sometimes if you work for a company or something and the AGM comes around every year or this thing comes every year, it can become like, oh, it's that again, we've got to organise it again. So sometimes you do need to have a little bit of time out, realise what you're missing, get that little bit of a panic about you may be left behind, and then it just gives you that real kind of fever and passion to get back in there again and sort of, you know, stamp on the ground and mark your space out and create that garden. Because, you know, one day there will come a day when you won't be there. So, you know, you just need to stamp your memory on that bit of Chelsea history while you can.
There's number one, it's the passion, and it's the people. Always, 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 always. Greatest thing I was ever told. Gardens mean nothing without people in them. That's the first thing. When you get to speak to the minds behind that space that you love, that you saw, that you enjoyed, in this case, fell in love with, it makes it all a little bit the more special. And essentially, I think you'll agree with me listening at home, it backs up a bit that maybe you thought, did they or didn't they think that, even if you've only just done early 18th century poetry, the ultimate is, was he or was he not thinking that? We have it in a nutshell here, with the voice, with that temperament, with that passion, with that grouge, you might say, to use the Irish word, which is a little bit stronger again. If you're stuck for any of this, you want lads' contact details, head to sideshow.com, they'll be up there, facebook.com/sideshow.com. And in the meantime, thank you at home so much for listening to this. And gentlemen, thank you so much. It's been a real genuine pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Enjoy it. Thank you for the opportunity.
And that was Adam and John, who I should add won gold and People's Choice Award for the World Horse Welfare Garden Chelsea 2017. A couple of words of note. The Sideshow Christmas Party takes place this Saturday, the 9th of December in Dublin City Centre. If you're about, it would be brilliant to see you. To put in context, last year I put out a photograph of myself and a lamp. I think I suggested that if anything, or anybody for that matter, turned up to do soiree, I would be absolutely over the moon. And whilst I have that Christmas party spirit in mind, perennial January gardeners annual ball, not a ball, drinks, collective get together, a gaggle of gardeners meet up, is taking place in London, down by Soho in the Flamingo Rooms. Tickets are on sale as we speak. And while I have perennial in mind, I should also add that last week I received a copy of their calendar with a photograph of my bare bottom, to quote Barbara Segal, in it. I can tell you it looks quite radiant, and it is the first time, or one of the first times, for me to see my own bottom. My head really is not built the same way as an L's. One more thing before we go. The Garden Media Guild Awards, of course, took place last week. My congratulations to the BBC, but it was a first for the Sideshow to be finalist listed or shortlisted. And my thanks to you all for listening to the Sideshow and for your support. To be quite fair, I had a ball. If you liked what you heard, you can leave a rate and review on iTunes. It'd be very much appreciated. And just so you're aware, the Sideshow t-shirts are, of course, still on sale at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and sideshow.com. Take care. I'll see some of you this Saturday. Have a great weekend, and we'll chat soon.